I want to spend a little time on it's a difficult subject to talk about, frankly, because it's uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people are not sure what to do about it. I think there are, I mean, a lot of folks, maybe it's not affected your life, maybe it has. That's substance abuse, prescription, or maybe even illegal drugs. And of course, it's almost, you know, epidemic proportions in parts of our, not just our state, but also our country. And I thought it may be good to maybe talk about it a little bit and address it a little bit. And we're going to visit with Melissa Dye. She is a grieving mother. She lost her son, sadly, and also one of the founders of Project Daris, which is a tremendous outreach organization to educate kids in the school systems, K-12. Melissa, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate this. It's not an easy subject to talk about, but it's an important one that that folks need to learn more about. And sadly, it's trending in the wrong direction, drug abuse and ODing and death. And first of all, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry, so much for having me.
You're a tremendous speaker. My wife has seen you speak several times and just comes away raving about what a great advocate for families and folks and about the issue, and also just a passionate speaker. If you could maybe just kind of briefly kind of just touch on how it's affected you and your life and how you got into this. I mean, you know, where the inspiration was to try to step out there and help other people with Project Daris.
Well, I'm not an addict, but this crisis has changed everything about my life. I continue to struggle every day trying to live without my son, Daris. He was my firstborn. He kind of made me who I am today, and he was a Marine who set out to do something great in this world, and he had an injury and was prescribed OxyContin, then became addicted, and from there our world was turned upside down. He did tell me that if he only knew where this would lead him, that he would have never even taken that first pill. So that's something that I think about every single day since I lost him. Today was actually a particularly hard day. I picked up my son's autopsy report and the 911 tape from the night that he overdosed. So I tried really hard not to read it, but I was just compelled to do so. And I realized that's why I do this, so that other parents don't have to walk in my shoes. After I lost Daris, for a long time, I felt like my life was ruined and I didn't know how to go on without him. You know, even though I was so thankful for the other blessings in my life, the pain was so paralyzing that no amount of happiness could fill this huge hole that I had in my heart. And I'm very thankful that God has, you know, shown me that I have a purpose and given me the strength to tell his story. And that's kind of why I do this, because it happened to him and I never thought that it could happen to one of my children. As sad as that is, that's happening all over the world today. And I meet parents every single day that reach out to me and in our community as well. At his funeral, I had like 50 people whisper in my ear that they were struggling with this same thing in their home. And it astounded me, because I was a critical care nurse. I worked in the ER and the ICU, and of course we saw overdoses, but I wasn't really aware of the magnitude of how it's touching people's lives. And so that's just kind of what I do now. I saw a lot of obstacles when Daris came to me and asked for help. And up until that point, he was functioning. So we you know, got him in rehab right away. He went off to rehab. But I spent like 10 to 12 hours just looking for a bed for him. Mm-hmm. And in that whole amount of time, I found two. One of them was quite expensive, and you know, the thoughts that kept going through my head were, why do parents have to be rich to try to save their children's life? And I'm aware he was 23 years old, but you know, he couldn't help himself at that point, and that's where I needed to be able to step in and help him. And I didn't know about Casey's Law, I didn't know about Vivitrol injections. There's just so much that I didn't know about, and I didn't have the tools to help save my son. So that's something that I try to educate our community, and I have other people that have volunteered their time as well that tried to help us reach as many people that we can.
I think what's interesting about your story, and by the way, we're talking with Melissa Dye. She is, I guess, the founder of Project Daris, co-founder of Project Daris. Did I get that right?
Yes, it's co-founder.
Co-founder. And I think, you know, what's interesting is, one is, substance abuse does not discriminate. It happens to, you know, any families of all walks of life. And secondly, how the addiction, as it builds, as it gets its hold on people, it can sort of fly under the radar a little bit. I think in his particular story, you weren't really aware of what he was struggling with until, you know, he had to reach out. I think, was it heroin that I think he eventually turned to medicate himself, and you weren't really aware of the hold that it had on him. I mean, wasn't really aware of what he was struggling with.
Right, and honestly, even when he got out of rehab, even though he left before the time that he was supposed to leave, I committed to paying for a year, and he committed to staying for a year, but after a couple months of sobriety, he kept saying, "Mom, I've got this. I can do this. I know what I need to do now. I have the tools and the resources, and I just want my life back. I've wasted enough time. I feel so great. I want to get back to work." And, you know, he left, and he had a job the very next day. He was back in the gym. Everything seemed normal, and I just didn't realize that he was still sick.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly got a powerful hold, and you know, it's an issue that seems it's getting worse, you know, not better. It's trending in the wrong direction, and I think a lot of folks, you know, who hear about this, that maybe have not been touched directly, or maybe they have, but they're not really sure what they can do and how we can sort of solve this epidemic. I mean, there's education, obviously, that's in advance of, but what can people do to kind of, you know, what direction can we go in as a community to try to solve this problem and to get it trending back in the other direction?
Well, I think one of the things that I feel is the most important is to try to stop the stigma, because, believe it or not, I have had people say the most horrendous things to me, that my son's death was a good riddance, it's God's way of cleaning out the gene pool. I've had private messages calling me every name imaginable, an enabler. I mean, it's honestly, it's unbelievable, and I realize why people don't want to talk about it. But the one thing that just keeps coming back to my mind when I try not to, you know, get angry when people say things that are so hurtful, mm-hmm. Is just to remember that we need to love one another. I mean, diseases are diseases, and when you sit down to actually do the research behind it, you can understand it. I mean, there is actual research that proves that addiction is a chronic brain disease. And I just would ask that people would try to stop and put themselves in my shoes, for instance, and realize that this can affect them. And how would they feel? Because I, you know, people would say, well, just let them overdose and die. Okay. And then if that was your child, can you say the same thing? And I mean, nobody can say that. Nobody can say, I have some Narcan right here, but my child's over here overdosing, but I'm just going to let him die because they chose this. They chose to do this. I mean,
what kind of person would say that? I mean, what kind of person would say that? I mean, what would possess someone to have that position and to say that to you? It's unconscionable.
Well, believe it or not, it's been more than one.
Well,
and I mean, you know, I reach out on Facebook to people to try to raise awareness, and these people are people that are on my friends list. These people have been coworkers of mine, nurses, that have said these types of things, and they have wrote these things on my Facebook posts for everybody to see. These have been, you know, my son was a Marine, and he was one of five handpicked staff Marines to work in the Wounded Warrior Battalion, and these are veterans that have said this kind of stuff to me. I mean, there are other mothers that have said this stuff to me. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it honestly is unbelievable, the stigma that is associated with this disease.
Melissa, if others out there are struggling with this, or they have family members are struggling with it, I mean, how can they reach out to you and your organization, and how can they get help?
Well, I would love for them to go to our Project Daris Facebook page, and if they can like that page, they can also send us private messages. We help people with Casey's Law. We help get people set up with Narcan. You know, like if a mother has a child who is, you know, at some point you can only do so much. So if she's concerned and she's worried about that, we can get her Narcan. I am a trained trainer, so I can train people to administer it. We have a list of resources. I have all the files needed for Casey's Law. And honestly, I'm not a professional and I do not have all the answers, but what we try to do is just provide a support for someone and to either get them talking or in the right direction of reaching out to their loved one to get help or to, you know, try to build some sort of support system for them.
Melissa, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it, and God bless you. I feel for you. I can't imagine what you're going through, but there are plenty of people out there I know that do support you, and we just certainly wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, Larry. God bless you too.
All right, that's Melissa.